You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
These cathedrals are empty. Hallowed grounds remain untouched. But normally by now, there's just a feel that it's coming. Ear-splitting decibel levels and soul-jarring vibrations. The soundtrack of college football is on the way. But these are not normal times. For a century and a half, college football has been a constant, interrupted only in some quarters and just briefly by world wars, now threatened by a relentless virus. Under stricter guidelines, the work continues. The preparation intensifies. Practice is days away. Will it lead to a season? If it does, that season will be unlike any in the history of the sport. Hello, everyone. Glad to have you with us on College Football Live, the state of the season. I'm Reese Davis. Joey Galloway, David Pollack, and Greg McElroy are here. We will hear from them shortly. Perhaps the best way to describe it is still cautious optimism that a college football season can be played safely, though I'm sure you're keeping up. Here is where we stand at the moment. Two major conference, Power Five conferences, have decided they will play conference-only schedules, the Big Ten and the Pac-12, deciding in early to mid-July to eliminate 42 games from their schedules and play only against conference opponents. The ACC, the Big 12, and the SEC have yet to make those types of decisions about the upcoming season, but they've already lost some non-conference games due to the Big Ten and Pac-12 deciding to play conference-only schedules and some FCS conferences that have decided not to play football this year. A handful of marquee games no longer on the schedule as a result of the pandemic, including Michigan and Washington, Alabama and USC was set for the opening weekend, Ohio State and Oregon was set for September 12th, and perhaps most notable, Notre Dame will not play USC. It'll be the first time in 75 years that those two longtime rivals have not played. Some conferences have postponed fall sports, including football, the Ivy League, the Patriot League, America East, A-10, and most recently the Southwestern Athletic Conference, though the SWAC says it will evaluate whether to play football in the spring. The Colonial Athletic Association has left it up to individual schools. That includes FCS power James Madison, who plans to play his schedule, though at the moment, at last check, only three-game schedule. They're hoping to get a full schedule by the time play begins, if it in fact does begin. So as college football forges ahead into the unknown, the uncharted territory, there are voices being heard about the need for improved leadership.
I really wish, Paul, we would have a commissioner of college football, and we wouldn't have different leagues doing different things and have so much uncertainty up in the air. If we were more uniform and we were all on the same page and everybody came back to school at the same time in the summer, everybody decided to play the same number of games, then we wouldn't be in a position that we are right now. And I hope that's something that we work toward. Somebody that could pull all the commissioners together and just lead the commissioners.
My gut feeling is we're going to play. We're preparing to play. I don't want my players to think any other way. Whether we start September 5th or a little bit later, I don't know that for sure. Whether we play in conference, out of conference, that doesn't bother me. I know this. I do believe we're going to play. I'm almost certain that we are going to play. The SEC needs football. State of Louisiana needs football. Our country needs football. It's time to get going.
Where do you put your level of concern about the football season?
High to very high. I look at the numbers every day, and we put a medical advisory group together in early April with the question of what do we have to do to get back to activity. But the direct reality is not good. And the notion that we've politicized medical guidance of distancing and breathing masks and hand sanitization, I mean, there's some very clear advice about you can't mitigate and eliminate every risk, but how do you minimize the risk. And we are running out of time to correct and get things right.
And you just heard from Greg Sankey, the SEC commissioner. He will join us live in just a few moments. Joining us right now is Heather Dinich, ESPN senior writer who covers college football and the college football playoff for us. So, Heather, you've spoken to so many of the decision makers. Where do we stand in terms of making a final decision and what will go into making the decision about whether we can play?
Well, they are going to exhaust almost all options they have to try and make this work. But the next 2 weeks, particularly the end of next week, July 31st, is a targeted benchmark to make some significant decisions. And the people that I have spoken to are expecting that decision to possibly center around whether or not the season starts on time. Next week, remember, this is when players are going to be allowed out on the field to do walkthroughs, actually have a football in their hand. They want to see how that experience goes to evaluate it before making any big decisions. Big 12 Commissioner Bob Bowlesby told me he took it even a step further and said, I want to see what it looks like when they have helmets and shoulder pads out there. So those are things that they're looking for. And also the return of students to campus is a major concern for all of these decision makers. August 1st, it happens at Notre Dame. Jack Swarbrick, their athletic director, told me today, just minutes before the show, he would like to see the season delayed.
Heather Dinich with the latest here. Heather, thank you for joining us tonight. Heather Dinich is a senior writer for ESPN. She's had so much insight on this as we countdown to the next important date. You see you on July 13th when workouts were able to begin. On the 24th, it's just 3 days away, the enhanced training schedule can begin for teams. And then normal camp, if things continue to proceed, would be able to open on August 7th. So we're joined by our guys now. So David Pollack, let's start with you. How viable do you think it is that we can play a season in the fall?
I'm very optimistic. I know there's a lot of pessimism going on, Reese, and you're going to find plenty of negativity. All you got to do is look for it about the football not coming back and the reasons not to. But I do feel optimistic. I think that all the people that have so much involvement, so much say, I think that we can find a way to continue to make this work. Reese, I'm not saying carelessly. I'm saying that we continue to implement rules, we continue to use masks, we continue to use testing, we continue to look at the NBA as it continues, look at MLB as it starts, and continue to grow and learn about the virus and learn ways to do it. But I'm optimistic. I think we have enough smart people involved in football that I do think we will be able to have a football season.
All right, I like it. I go with you, David. I think we're going to have a football season. It may not be on time. It's going to look different. But I think you have to prepare, and you hear every coach say that they're preparing as if we are going to play. And that's the same thing I'm doing. I'm preparing as if we are going to play, because you can't do it the other way. You can't, you know, not prepare for it and then all of a sudden have a season. So I think there's a lot of smart people making a lot of good decisions. The problem is we just don't know week to week, month to month, what's going to happen. But I do know that everyone has given their best effort to get this done and to have a season in some way, shape, or form. And I believe that they will get it done and we will have a season.
Yeah, I'm going to echo what both those guys said. I anticipate a fall season. However, I don't know if I anticipate a game being played on September 5th, which is exactly when the regular season is really supposed to get underway. I think they're going to take as much time as humanly possible to make an educated decision. And we've talked a lot about uniformity. Can we find it in college football as regards to testing, with regards to protocols, how long are guys going to quarantine, what are schedules going to look like? Those are all questions that need to be answered here in the next few weeks. And to assume that we're going to get kicked off on week one, on September 5th, with a whole slate of games with everybody following proper protocols, is just a very difficult thing for me to assume. But I do anticipate a season starting, but I expect it to be early October, maybe late September.
Greg, you know, I've been privy to, not only in football, but some other sports, some very extensive, detailed measures that have been undertaken to try to protect the athletes, to try to make sure that they do everything humanly possible not to get the virus. I had a medical professional tell me the other day, the virus doesn't care about the protocols. Now, look, all of us want football. We're all hopeful. What would make you uncomfortable with playing the season?
I would feel really uncomfortable if we didn't have protocols that would allow for ample testing. And honestly, if we're not going to have players that are mature enough to understand the ramifications of them potentially being exposed and how that can impact their teammates and how that can impact teammates on the other side of the field as well, that would make me very concerned. And we actually saw some of that early in the summer with players from several different universities that it's well documented that they were not following social distancing. They were not following quarantine guidelines. So those would make me uncomfortable. But guys, me as a player, if I'm looking at it, I'm a 21-year-old Greg McElroy and I'm going into my junior year at Alabama, I would play. I would, especially yep. if I knew that the testing could be responsive enough where I can know whether or not I'm positive or negative or every one of my teammates is positive or negative, and we have to go out on Saturday and play against a team that has also been tested under the same guidelines and protocols. So I'd be comfortable playing if I were in their shoes, but I'd like to know that testing were up to speed in order to do that.
Well, I think Reese, he hit the main one. Obviously, testing's a big deal, but I think if you had a young person that was a very healthy person get very, very sick, and you see that obviously that it's not just it's you see that it's a virus that it puts somebody, a younger person, you know, in bad shape, and I don't want to talk about how bad a shape, but I mean literally it puts them in a bed on a ventilator where they're in bad shape, and it's somebody that's a football player that's known that was healthy and no problems. I think now is when that would start to change the focus and change the narrative for everybody across college football. And I think that's the fear, as everybody says, if something like that was to happen, it would quickly shut everything down, I think, really, really quick, fast, and in a hurry.
And that's the biggest question, is what happens when someone does get sick? What is the next step in all of this? We're never going to test everyone and do their best to make sure that nobody catches it, but somebody is going to catch it. The virus has proven that it has stuck around this long, and when people get in groups and they're in contact, it has spread, and it's still spreading pretty quickly. And so in this situation, people are going to catch the virus. What is the next step? What happens when someone gets sick? Ohio State had to shut down their workouts because some kids caught the virus, so they shut the whole thing down. So we get into this season, whatever it looks like, whenever it starts, they're going to have to pad in some open time in there that, let's just say, Clemson has to shut down because a couple kids catch it, and they're scheduled to play a Florida State. Where does that game go to? So this is going to be really interesting, and my concerns would be, what happens when someone catches it, when someone gets sick, how long do we shut down, where do we go from there? But if I was a 18, 19-year-old kid, I would absolutely want to go play, and I would trust that my coaches and administrators are making good decisions.
Most of the players that we've been able to speak with, they want to play, but that you guys hit it right on the head. The biggest fear, and virtually everyone I've talked to said that the people who have tested positive in their respective programs have not gotten seriously ill. But everyone's afraid that the next one will be the one. So that's something that is unpredictable because of this nature of this novel virus that we're dealing with now. Some things, though, haven't really changed a whole lot, including the improvement of facilities. And at Alabama, which already had really nice places, look at the new digs for the locker room. You saw Mac Jones there, a presumptive starter at quarterback for the upcoming season. I imagine the locker room is named after McElroy after a giant donation to his alma mater to help fund that, I'm sure. So, some sweet new digs, and the players wearing masks and enjoying social distancing as they check out the new locker rooms. SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey will join us live in just a few minutes to talk about his perspective, what protocols and what things need to be met if we're going to play football. And it's also been an offseason in which the players' voices have had huge impact and few larger than Florida State's Marvin Wilson. He will join us on College Football Live.
Right now, we need a team effort to stop COVID-19.
As you know, we are in a very serious situation right now with the pandemic that's going on.
We all have a responsibility to protect our health and the health of our loved ones.
We must be sure we stay at home if we have symptoms, wash your hands often.
Please follow your local authorities with the protocol and the guidelines that they've set forth.
Follow all social distancing guidelines, and please wear a mask anytime you're around other people.
If Together, we will beat COVID-19.
Protect each other so we all can be together again in the fall.
Zio's coaches rocking those team masks. Earlier this week, the NCAA released its third installment recommendations about how to protect athletes. Among the newest recommendations, daily self-help checks, appropriate use of the face coverings and social distancing, even during training, and testing of results within 72 hours of competition in high contact risk sports such as football. We are pleased to be joined now by the commissioner of the SEC, Greg Sankey. Greg, let's start with this. What are the determining factors that will tell us whether the SEC will be able to play this fall?
Well, we went through really a basic list today with athletics directors looking at campus situations, local situations, state situations that would allow us to play. Those are really threshold issues. And the minutiae of that probably is not that interesting. What you just showed was an important piece. So the Autonomy 5 conferences have been working since May to have common protocols so that we could line up and know people across the line of scrimmage are healthy. The NCAA got involved in July, and Dr. Hainline produced that third edition of resocialization guidelines, which sets some expectations. And so we're working through those to make sure we're prepared to support the health and safety of our student athletes in the most positive way possible.
Dr. Hainline takes care of the medical direction for the NCAA. Greg, understanding that right now without a vaccine, that there's no way to absolutely prevent anybody contracting this virus, you're not going to have zero positive tests across the board. What threshold do your medical advisors tell you would be appropriate and acceptable to be able to continue forward and pursue playing this season?
We haven't asked them the question that way, Reese. What we have asked them is, what protocols and standards do we need to have in place, given an environment which has not existed previously, to support the healthy activity of young people? And we began that in June 8th, and in the previous segment it was noted, we've had some young people that have had to go through some learning experiences, which is not just about positive tests, but a whole lot of isolation and quarantining as a result of being around people. And that's been the focus, as opposed to saying, here's the ABC. It's kind of a broader picture about how do we support student-athlete health in a new environment.
So in terms of that, how would you describe your level of confidence in the protocols and the measures that your member schools have undertaken to try to do that and protect the players?
Well, I told our AD, so I think we're probably the only conference that's hosted an in-person meeting of our athletics directors, which we did in a socially distanced, breathing mask way last Monday. I told them the last time the word confidence was used in my life was probably March 10th, which was Tuesday of basketball tournament weeks. And so we have been working diligently to prepare. And I've said repeatedly, my job is to make sure we're prepared to play as scheduled. And then the circumstances around the virus will determine whether that can happen or not. So that's been the focus. And I'm confident that we have continued to adapt and prepare and support young people in the right sort of way to give us the opportunity to play. Now, those decisions are still to come about actually playing, but to date, I think we've met the objectives that we identified back in April as we were engaging doctors and providing us guidance on a regular basis.
Greg, we played a clip earlier in the show in which you said we're running out of time to get this right. In your judgment now, what presents the bigger obstacle to being able to play? The way member institutions are handling their protocols, or the impact that the public might have and spike rates and things of that nature in the various areas surrounding your schools?
From where I sit, it's really what happens within the athletics endeavor. And you know, I've referenced a couple of times our preparation. And so we've seen healthy practices emerge, and you're showing some on the screen right now. We had a meeting of our student-athlete football leadership council last Wednesday, and Alante Taylor from the University of Tennessee was moving around a little bit with a mask on the whole time. And that's the kind of message that we need to send, and that's why really after a meeting of our presidents and chancellors, they said, you know what, Greg, you need to be more clear that this global problem is an issue for us locally. And we're going to work locally to support our student athletes in the most positive way possible, in the most healthy way possible. we're going to adapt. And as the CDC changes its guidelines, we'll continue to adapt. And so we're all part of this, which is the message that was sent with the understanding. I think we've done a really good job within our athletics programs to achieve those objectives I identified.
We showed earlier practice can start August 7th. We've heard a lot about a July 31st or thereabouts necessary deadline to determine whether the season can start or start on time. What is the deadline to you?
I haven't put a deadline. I've actually put dates out there. And Reese, I wrote up a timeline way back in May, and I realized how much has changed since then. So we look at next week as an important milestone. And the way I'll explain it is I have finished 41 marathons in my life, and I realize you're going to go mile by mile, and we are on that journey. The challenge right now is to understand where the finish line may be. And you know, last week we increased athletic activity. There's an opportunity to do the same later this week. And so we've had a check-in point today about our preparations to do so. Next week is a week prior to practice. We will have seen a lot of professional sports activity through the month of July. NFL training camps are scheduled to begin officially next week. But we've got rookies reporting, so we've got learning opportunities there. And we've tried to use every one of these experiences as a learning opportunity to help inform our decision-making. And the milestone check next week is, are we ready to move into that stage of practice? And part of that will be a conversation about what does the season look like. And that's a conversation that's been taking place for weeks.
Greg, I know you and the other commissioners from the Autonomous Five conferences have spoken a lot, yet the Big Ten and the Pac-12 opted early to go conference only. How would you describe the SEC's willingness should a major conference decide not to play or to postpone the season and you deem it safe? How willing are you to go out and do it the best way you see fit, regardless of what other conferences do?
Well, here's the problem I see with the spring right now. So we've kept that on a list of alternatives, but I've not had the explanation of how we'll be assured some reality come spring that will be better than the fall. And in fact, as you look at cold and flu season, which people have talked about, the deeper you go, the more problematic that can be. And we're all in this world of unpredictability. We are building the bridge as we cross the river and writing the instruction manual as we do so. So people may make that decision. In fact, I think some of our colleagues in smaller conferences have identified that as a solution. I think our focus properly is what can we achieve in the fall, and to the extent that doesn't become possible to support in a healthy way, we'd have to pivot, and we'll be prepared to pivot quickly, but want to focus right now on how do we support healthy activity in the next few months.
Greg, always a pleasure to talk to you. Appreciate you spending some time with us tonight.
Well, thank you, Reese, and appreciate the optimism that the panelists shared. You know, who knows what will happen, but we'll keep working to see if we can make college football a possibility for all who care so much about it.
Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the SEC, happy to have him with us tonight on College Football Live. Greg alluded to the potential for a spring season. How viable is that? What are some problems with it? I am well noted as a skeptic of this for a variety of reasons. We'll see what Joey, Greg, and David think when you come back. Southwestern Athletic Conference has decided not to have fall sports, but along with that, that does include football. They are at least examining the possibility of playing their season during the 2021 spring semester. Whether that becomes something that the SWAC chooses to do remains to be seen, but they are at least examining the possibility. It's something that's been kicked around quite a bit as we look at the possibility of how to handle this upcoming season. Oklahoma head coach Lincoln Riley has said, quote, "I think people who say it's not an option, in my opinion, just don't want to think about it. I just think it would be wrong of us to take any potential option off the table right now. I think it would be very difficult to say the spring is not a potential option. I, for one, think it's very doable. I, for one, see a multitude of problems with the spring season, not the least of which we've talked so much, Greg, about player safety, concussion protocol. Game collisions are far different than the controlled environment in practice. And you'd be asking them to play, some players to play a spring season, then turn around without a customized length of time to train to get ready for a season and play again, even if you roll the fall season back a little bit. I see a multitude of problems with the spring. What do you think?
I'm 100% with you. I actually think that the pros don't outweigh the costs in the spring. There's two problems with the spring, like you alluded to. We already know player safety is of massive importance when it comes to collisions and recovery. And if you finish a season in May and then all of a sudden re-rack it just a month later, hey, summer workouts are upon us, and then we're back in fall camp in August and we're playing the 2021 season, I don't think that's a good practice for the season to undertake. Now, I understand the pros as well, because the pros, well, it gives us more time to potentially find a vaccine. It gives us some more time to assess and maybe find a more reliable testing protocol. So I understand the pros, but Reese, I'm 100% with you. I think and you also, by the way, you lose the margin for error. We are operating on slim margins to begin with, and if you push it back all the way and say start maybe around March, then you have no margin for error, and you could run the risk of losing the football season and the academic school year altogether. So I would applaud a fall start, maybe just a little pushback, but a spring season concerns me an awful lot, Joey.
It gets interesting to me. Does Trevor Lawrence play? Does Justin Fields play? Do some of these guys that are surefire top five picks in the NFL draft, which we know happens, I believe, in April, are they going to play in a spring season knowing that the draft is coming up? They're not going to have a chance to prepare. They risk injuries and things that may take away their ultimate dream of playing NFL football. So if we move it back, and I think Greg Sankey brought up something I haven't heard talked about much, we don't know where we'll be in the spring. We don't know if it'll actually be better as we're talking about moving things back. You know, this thing has sort of gone wild and no one knows. But if I'm one of these guys that is going to be a top five, top 10 pick in the NFL draft, and you're asking me to play in the spring, and I know the draft is in April, I don't think I'm playing. We already have guys not playing in bowl games because they're getting ready for the draft, and that's a couple months later. Now we're talking going right into the draft. It would be very interesting to see how many guys actually play.
So I agree with you guys. Obviously, there's plenty of concern. So here's what I do like, though. You look at the FCS. The FCS canceled their football season, obviously, for the fall. How about the FCS be spring football from now on? Like, I would love to see that more than anything. You talk about the NFL, Joey, not as many of those guys are we worried about going to the NFL and skipping time. You're not going to have a lot of guys that are missed season. What's the factor that involves, you know, why don't you pay attention to the FCS as much? Because you got all the big boys playing where people follow the fan bases. How about you give me spring football, not just this next year, but from now on, FCS level spring football all the time. So you get TV deals and sponsorship deals, and they thrive more and have great seasons with more eyeballs, more fun for us because we get to see more football in the spring. That would be an idea I think would be awesome.
Heather?
The commissioners that I have spoken to, guys, have told me that it's not their first choice, it's not their second choice, but you sure better be prepared to do it, and it has to be considered a viable option. But you heard Greg Sankey say exactly what every other commissioner has told me, which is, Heather, we have no idea if we're going to be better off in the spring than we are right now as far as the pandemic. So it doesn't make any sense for us to throw our hands up right now, say scrap the fall in favor of the spring. But I can tell you, I spoke to the SWAC commissioner last night, Charles McClellan, and he told me the reason they did that was to give their fans and their players hope, something to look forward to, knowing that it still might not happen.
At the highest level in the Power Five, we all understand the fiscal necessity of having football season for their budgets. Everybody understands that. If they were to have to proceed with this plan, look, everybody's still going to watch. It will be a ratings bonanza. Everybody knows this. But it will be very hard for me to accept anyone who would take the position that these guys don't, A, have every right to pursue their name, image, and likeness, which they already are, and B, that they're de facto employees. I mean, if you're willing to condense two seasons that close together, with the caveat that maybe if you roll the 2021 back into deep October, maybe there is enough time. But I think we know why that has to happen. And look, finances are a reality. We understand that football drives the boat for virtually every major athletic program, particularly among the autonomous five conferences. Then there's also this. Now, Greg mentioned March, but I think most of the thing you would think is that the season would start, if there ever were a spring season, a little bit earlier. Look at the comparison between February and November in terms of temperatures in those four particular Big Ten cities. Would be just a little chilly out there by the time we play. You know what? If we get to play, we're going to pursue championships, and we'll actually talk some on-the-field football and title contenders when you come back to College Football Live.
This is a great cap to a great season.
The biggest thing that this team had was want to. If you want to do something, you can accomplish anything in your life. Oh, that Tiger, baby!
As LSU reigns as national champions, who would be the favorites to get the next one? The Gators checking in 12-1 odds to win the national championship. Six starters back on offense, including Kyle Trask. Georgia, though, still the standard in the East. Potential quarterback battle brewing between a couple of transfers, Jamie Newman and JT Daniels. Alabama, despite replacing Tua Tagovailoa, still 5-1 to win the national championship. A couple of star receivers coming back, Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle. Ohio State, Ryan Day, three-year contract extension. Heisman finalist Justin Fields is back. They are 3-1 to win it all. But it's hard to find a team more complete than Clemson. Trevor Lawrence, Travis Etienne back, and the Tigers sit on the board as 5-2 favorites to win the national championship. So, look, this has been an offseason filled with disruptions. Clemson, I think, actually got 9 of their spring practices in before everything was shut down. Bound to be disruptions. Joey, which team best handled a suit a season like this and perhaps win the national championship?
I think it's going to come down to one of these teams that have a veteran quarterback that has played a lot of football, like a Clemson, like an Ohio State and Justin Fields. I think even if you go further, you go down to Texas, Sam Ellinger, they have a lot of starters coming back. I think veterans on your football team, that always starts with your quarterback position. You have a leader at quarterback that has won a lot of football games, played a lot of good football. A lot of guys can follow that guy because this isn't normal. We're not out practicing like we normally do. So you look at teams that have veterans and great playmakers will have the best chance in this situation because they won't have the same amount of practice time and work out on the field together. So those teams that have quarterback coming back that are good will have the best chance.
No, I hear what you're saying about quarterback, Joe. I think to me it's about depth. I mean, you're talking about a pandemic. You're talking about testing. You're talking about quarantine rules that we're going to have in place. You better have depth at every position because you never know this year more than ever when you're going to lose. So who does that benefit? The same old same. The same teams we talk about every single year. Let's go down the list. Clemson, so much depth. Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia. Those are the teams every single year we see that when somebody gets hurt, they're okay because they've recruited at such a high level over the past several years that they have multiple guys at multiple positions, especially in a year like this with the pandemic and the unsure testing and the unsure quarantine and all that stuff.
I hear both that. I love the depth call, Dave. That's a great call. To me, it's about continuity because I look at these teams that potentially missed out on 10, 12 spring practices. They haven't gotten to work with new coordinators or new head coaches or a new quarterback breaking in new weapons at wide receiver. I look at continuity. That to me is by far the biggest, most important asset that you can have going into a season that is going to be unpredictable. If the quarterback can be player-led and he's been there before and he's done it, then he can organize practices. If he knows the offense, it's already been installed several times before in years past or potentially last fall. So I think teams with remarkable continuity, not just at head coach, but at the coordinator spots and at quarterback, those are going to be the things that are very, very important to having success in what should be uncharted territories this fall.
Yeah, Greg, we saw a number of those head coaches who have gotten a little bit behind due to the pandemic. I think it's a great point about continuity, and there's no better example of that. How will Georgia, not only with the quarterbacks, but with the new offensive coordinator, Todd Monken, coming in once the Dogs are able to start practice, assuming that we're able to play. Still to come on College Football Live, Florida State star defensive lineman Marvin Wilson will join the show to talk about the impact the voice of the player can have. For generations, football coaches have espoused the virtue of the life lessons that the sports can teach. But generally speaking, those lessons have flowed one way. The coach instills wisdom. The player learns a life lesson. After all, they say it's not the coach's job to please the players. It's the player's job to please the coach. That line of thinking does still have some merit in terms of starting positions and on-field decisions and playing time. But in a healthy culture, communication goes both ways. Words like family and culture are ubiquitous around college football. But during this offseason, those words became more than just a word on a weight room wall or a slogan on a T-shirt. In a healthy culture and a real family, the players showed it's not just the coaches who can speak up and instill wisdom and teach lessons.
Say black lives, you say matter. Black lives.
See, as a black man, injustice and police brutality, it's just something that just happened. I just would hope it wouldn't be me.
Yesterday, I took a stand that was not only for me or FSU football, not even for athletes in general. It's for Big George Floyd.
We can't be silent. We must speak up for our brothers and sisters against racism, against brutality.
To turn all this pain into purpose. But it starts with each of us individually.
We kneel with you. We are here for you to support you. This is all of us against racism.
You know, everybody has to get off the sideline and get in the game and be part of the solution.
It all started with you guys. You guys said something, somebody that could do something heard, and he said something. And then it got to the bureaucracy, and they said something.
We really got an opportunity right here to change the world and change our community and change our state and change people's hearts and bring people together.
I'm sure most of you know Marvin Wilson, not only as one of the top defensive linemen in the country from Florida State, but also because of his leadership position on the team. A couple of months ago, new head coach Mike Norvell erroneously said that he had spoken to every member of the Seminoles in the aftermath of George Floyd's death. Marvin used his social media platform to point out the error. Norvell apologized and admitted that Wilson was, in fact, correct. And by most accounts, it appears that the communication and the trust have improved at Florida State since. We're most pleased to be joined by Marvin Wilson now as he joins us from Tallahassee. And Marvin, that moment where you spoke up, what's the most significant change that you've noticed, not only in the Florida State program, but from the situations at Oklahoma State and Iowa and other places where the players' voices have really had a major impact?
Since that incident that took place here, I've just seen so many other different college football players realize that they have a voice, you know, just from seeing different guys speak up on injustice around, not even just within college football, but around the world, and using their platforms to speak up. And use who they really are, the brand they have created for themselves. It's a great feeling just to see different guys realizing that value that they have to this world.
How much influence did you think players had prior to this as opposed to what you see now?
Honestly, truth be told, I really didn't think we had that much of an impact. You know, just being a college football player, I think people just feel like we should just play football, you know, just shut up and go on about our day. But I feel like after taking that stand, I really feel like everybody around the nation sees that we have a voice, we have a platform, and starting to use it and vocalize their different opinions outside of just sports.
And Marvin, what is the next step of that? So you vocalized your opinion, people have stood up and said things. What is the next step, and how do you affect change through your actions?
For me personally, my next step is I've started a foundation, Join Marvin's Movement. That's the thing, my foundation that I've started, just teaching financial literacy to different kids in Tallahassee. We're going to get started within next couple of weeks, probably at the end of July, honestly. We'll have our first session. We have a group of kids coming in, teaching financial literacy, you know, how to be homeowners, different things, how to create a budget, manage their own money and different things like that. And that's one of my things, me moving forward, personally, that I took upon myself. Following that event, we all had a unity walk as a team. Different guys are starting their own foundations around just a program and different things and impacts they want to have around community. As a team moving forward, we're doing a minimum of 10 hours community service, everybody on the team. But we have a lot more guys. They're going to do a lot more. and go above and beyond. And, you know, it's just different things like that moving forward. We're trying to have a bigger impact around the community in Tallahassee.
Marvin, just kudos to you, man. That is so cool that you guys are using your platform for change. When you thought about it and when you tweeted about your coach, I'm just putting myself in your shoes many years ago as a player. Dude, I'd have been scared to death to send that tweet. Like, I just just because the coach and there's so much sometimes the way they look at you, like you kind of have fear. Did you have any fear when you sent that tweet, or what was going through your mind when you sent that tweet out about your coach?
Honestly, I was very nervous about going through the whole situation, but we did this as a team. Me being a leader, I spoke to my teammates about before I even take this in, and I had to make sure that we're all on one accord and everybody felt the same way, because we're going to do this together. I wasn't going to do it at all. We weren't going to do it together as a team. You know, we do one thing, we all do it together. And that was the easy part about the situation that kind of put me at ease once I sent the tweet out. Once I sent it out, just knowing everybody was behind my back helped me be at ease. But the moment it did, it took off like a wildfire. And, you know, just after I took the stand, I couldn't look back, and I knew my life was going to drastically change forever.
Marvin, I'll echo what David said in saying that we're proud of you, man. It's an amazing job of using your platform and creating change and creating conversation. So we're proud of you. But I'd be remiss if we let you out of here without asking you about the decision that you made to return for your senior year, knowing that there was so much uncertainty, coaching change, all this stuff. What was it that led to you making that decision? And what can we expect to see from the Seminoles, assuming we get to see you guys this fall?
The Seminoles are coming to restore Florida State football. You know, this last couple of months have been great with our new staff, you know, having so much talent coming back, especially on the defensive side of the ball, being able to get back out there with the guys, working out and stuff like that, even through this virus. You know, we know what we have, and we know what we can do this upcoming season. You know, it's been great just being back with the guys. And one of the decisions I came back is because I know that we can win games. I know we can do it on a big scale and not just doing 6 to 7 games. I feel like we're going to have a 10-plus win season just with the guys we have on both sides of the ball and with the great coaching staff that Coach Novell's put together. I feel like we're going to do great things this year.
Marvin, in light of the pandemic, how would you describe your level of anxiety about playing this season?
It's been up and down. You know, some days is worse than others, you know, and some days are better than others. You know, just every day I get to I just put it in God's hand. Every day I wake up, I pray about it. I come here every morning to see my teammates, and I just don't even think about it. We just hope for the best every single day. And we just come in and work our butts off.
Marvin, so impressive, man. We applaud you for taking a stand and for making your voice heard in a responsible way and the things that you're trying to do to help kids in the area. Thank you for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
So as you think about the voice of the player, David, you mentioned that you would have been nervous to send the tweet. And to be clear, I think the best coaches have always listened to players, but it seems to be different now.
No, I mean totally different. Just because you didn't feel like as a player back in the day you had the authority to say something and to speak against the coach or to disagree with the coach. I mean, I can tell you from my era, just it would have never happened. So it's definitely a good thing that players are starting to understand. You know, Reese, guys, I think this will be a huge deal the way coaches coach from now on. All those old school coaches that think they can throw insults and be degrading all the time, those guys are going to go away really, really quickly now with players having power. So you're going to be treated a lot differently, and it's because you had the wherewithal to be able to have guys that can say stuff and speak out. And so I think that it's definitely a positive thing, and coaches are going to have to watch their tongues and their behaviors more than they ever have.
It's a beautiful thing because as a college football player, and Dave and Joey, you guys have both been through it. I've been through it, and a lot of people that are watching at home have been through it. You only get one experience. You only get one chance to play college football. You should have control and say in how that experience looks and feels. And if you're not happy with what you're going through as a player, whether it's within your organization, within the locker room, out in the community where your school is, then you should have the opportunity to voice your displeasure and try to make it better for yourself. I think it's a beautiful thing. And I think, guys, we're just getting started. I think the voice of the player is going to become louder given the power of social media. And we're on the cusp, I think, of seeing some very different tunes, I think, from coaches like David alluded to here in the years to come.
And it's bigger than just the voice for the players and making it better for the players. And I think Marvin Wilson spoke eloquently about what they're doing next. And that's what truly matters. These guys have earned an opportunity to do some things that a lot of people will never get a chance to do sitting at Florida State. Some of these other schools have a chance to play football for Florida State, get that education, and then make those kind of statements. But it's the next step that actually matters to the people that weren't blessed the same, people that aren't at Florida State, helping the kids with literacy, creating a foundation. And that's when standing up actually matters to the entire country and to people beyond you, so that people can step through the same doors that you kicked open. And I think that's what's so impressive about what Marvin Wilson is doing, is not just speaking up for his situation, but speaking up, making it better for everyone that comes behind him.
And players have to be very smart with how they use this. They can't use this all the time. They have to use it very responsibly and use it in times when they really can, and use specific examples to make change, like Texas did. Texas did an amazing job of going with examples of things they want to change, and they got it changed. So it has to be used really, really well and collaboratively together.
And you know who used it well? Mississippi State running back Kylin Hill, who said he wouldn't play for Mississippi State as long as the state of Mississippi had Confederate imagery on the flag. That has been changed. And just a few minutes ago, Kylin Hill from Mississippi State got the key to the city from his hometown in Columbus, Mississippi, and well-deserved. Coming up, they are playing. They're playing in the MLS. Group stage matches on ESPN2, Deportes and the app. Atlanta United, Columbus Crew follows us at 8, then Montreal against DC United. Reminder, boxing coming up. Former WBO featherweight champ Oscar Valdez faces the seasoned veteran Jason Velez in our top-ranked boxing main event tonight in Vegas. Prelims start at 8 on ESPN Deportes and the app. And tonight, MLS group stage matches here on ESPN2, ESPN Deportes and the ESPN app. Atlanta United, Columbus Crew follows us at 8 Eastern. Then it'll be Montreal Impact taking on DC United. We appreciate everybody joining us. For Heather Denich, David Pollack, Greg McElroy, Joey Galloway, I'm Reese Davis saying thanks for watching and reminding you now, the Soccer Breakdown is coming in 3, 2, 1.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.